big thing they've got to think about is who are they going to replace Yuki Tsunoda with when he goes up to Red Bull?
I don't want Yuki to go to Red Bull now. That second seat is cursed because Liam Lawson is having...
He's having the stinker of all stinkers.
But he's not delivering. He can't handle that car at all. Is it going to get better?
I'd go as far as saying he's doing a worse job so far than Checo would have done.
So, before this podcast gets started, this is just a reminder that this podcast was filmed prior to the news of Lewis Hamilton, Charles Leclerc and Pierre Gasly at risk of being disqualified from the Chinese Grand Prix. So, just bear that in mind when you are listening to this podcast. But anyway, enjoy. Okay,
welcome back, everyone, to a brand new episode of Box Box Podcast in collaboration with Box Box Club, home of the greatest F1 widgets app. We do have an exclusive offer for you. If you want it, you can download the app for free. I should make that abundantly clear to all of you. It's absolutely free to download. It makes your phone feel like an F1 hub, right? It's beautiful. But if you do want the ultra version, we have an exclusive 30% discount code for you guys. Click the link in the description down below. But today, we're here to talk about China. We've literally just got off the back of that race. It is approximately 9:28 a.m. in the UK. It finished at about 20 to 9.
Yeah, about that.
Thoughts? Initial thoughts, and then we'll do, you know, the official intro.
Initial thoughts was, it looks like teams are going to be closer, which was good because, you know, it wasn't like somebody was walking off with it with like a 20-second lead or whatever. Mm-hmm. So that was promising. Was it the most exciting race? No. It wasn't one which I was thought...
I mean, it definitely wasn't.
Okay, it wasn't the most exciting race, but there was some good talking points, which we will get onto throughout this. And obviously, we had the sprint this weekend as well, which made it more exciting. We've always said the more F1 content we get, the better. So we've had, obviously, practice, sprint qualifying, sprint, qualifying, race.
The F1 content, the more the better, is great when it's not at 3 a.m. in the morning.
Yeah.
But we cannot take that for granted because here in the UK, we get majority of the races at incredible times. It's the people in, you know, Australia, China, Japan, all of that. And they're having to do that for most of the season.
Yeah. No, you can't complain. And actually, it's been quite nice. You know, 7 a.m. race this morning was actually quite nice.
7 a.m. is fine. But like, obviously yesterday, which that would be Saturday for you guys listening. Yesterday was wake up at 10 to 3, watch the sprint race, then wake up at, you know, 5:30 in to be ready in time for quality. So it was a little bit like, wow.
It is funny though, isn't it? You see a lot of memes kind of like, and do let us know, you know, if you got up and watched it. I find it a lot easier getting up for F1 content than I do actually going, I've got to go to work.
Well, yeah.
I know that's obvious, but, you know, it's kind of like, I don't mind. Like, I got up yesterday, watched a sprint race in bed, quite nice, chilled, race finished, TV off, fall asleep, wake up, qualifying again. It's great.
See, I watched it in bed, but on my phone.
Ah, okay. So, I mean, it was nice. It was nice. Do let us know if there's any of you who actually did get up at 3 a.m. to watch the race yesterday, because I know a few of my friends didn't. Jamie even messaged me going, did you actually get up at 3 to watch it?
Do you know what? And I know we're going to touch on the whole weekend, but if Lewis hadn't have qualified P1, I can't guarantee I would have woken up.
No. Yeah.
I would have obviously watched it back so we could come here, but there was part of me was disappointed that he qualified P1 because then I knew I had to wake up so early. But
it was definitely worth getting up for.
It was, 100%.
It was. But welcome along. Firstly, I just need to apologise because last week, it's normally Luke who takes quite a brunt of the comments on TikTok and all that lot. I took quite a lot of stick this week from comments which
rightly
we said,
so as well.
Well, you know, we spoke about, you know, Liam Lawson. Is he a rookie? Is he not? Had quite a lot of people tell me that actually... I have no F1 knowledge. I don't know what I'm talking about.
That part is right.
Not entirely true. That I don't know what I'm talking about. And, you know, they give anyone a mic for a podcast.
No, it's actually not true. We had to buy these. Yeah. They're expensive. They didn't just give them to us.
So I'm sorry that I triggered a few of you. But actually, I still stand by my decision. Yeah, Liam Lawson is not a rookie.
Although, he is driving like one.
He's definitely
I will double down on that point, that Liam Lawson is not a rookie. And if you're using Ollie Bearman as the sort of comparison, then I think that's just a really stupid argument.
Yeah.
The guy had two races in F1, Ollie Bearman, right? At the opposite ends of the season. It's Saudi Arabia, where I'm pretty sure he basically only had the race, didn't he?
Only had the race. He had qualifying.
Okay.
He had the weekend.
He got thrown in like during the weekend though, didn't he?
Yeah.
And then Brazil, which, you know, circumstantially that race was horrible, but it's still a race, so...
And Baku.
But Liam Lawson had two stints in Formula One.
Good stints.
Consecutive stints.
The question is, okay, and I want to hear from you guys at home.
He had like half of last season.
He did. Well, yeah, he did. Well, from Singapore onwards, wasn't it? Yeah. From after Singapore, he took over from Daniel Ricciardo. But I want to hear from you guys at home because, I've taken a lot of stick this week for saying Liam Lawson is a rookie. One of the questions...
You said Liam Lawson isn't a rookie.
Okay, let me rephrase that. So, as you know,
I don't want to confuse them.
I don't. It is early. I want to hear from you guys at home because, you know, last week I did say Liam Lawson is not a rookie. I got a lot of stick, and a lot of hate, which, you know, fine, whichever. But I want to know, and somebody made a good point. If Colapinto comes back into the sport after his stint in Williams last year, is he a rookie or not?
No. He's not a true rookie. You can say, but he's inexperienced. But he's not a rookie. I'm sorry, like, I don't know what you define rookie as, and I feel like it's probably open to interpretation.
Yeah.
Which is why, you know, some of you probably disagree. I'm sure a lot of you sit at home and agree. Yeah, like, they're not really rookies. It's not like Bortoleto is coming with no F1 experience or Hadjar. Different, they've had good stints. I don't think that means you have to cut them less slack, so to speak, but we can accept that they're not truly rookies.
No, and I think, you know, Colapinto's a bit of a different one because he's had the half a season, compared to maybe Lawson, who's had two half seasons, whatever.
What was it, like four or five races in the first...
2023, one. He had a good chunk in 2024.
That's what I mean, and he's had like a good few races under his belt.
So Colapinto is on that cusp for me.
Can I just say, Colapinto is edging ever closer to that seat, but I'm sure that's something we'll discuss when we get to Alpine.
So, yeah, welcome along. So let's get into what we've decided to do.
What's coming up on the show today?
Okay, we're going to talk all things China. I've got a few questions for you. We've got fan questions as well. Again, for you guys who haven't, you know, who've just come across us, check us out on all social media. We'll post a post on Instagram every week asking for you guys to get your questions in. Some good questions this week. So I'm looking forward to that.
And you can also email us. The email is in the description if you're watching us on YouTube. If you're listening to us, wherever you're listening to us, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or any other audio platform that you consume us, give us a 5-star rating if you're able to. It really does make a difference to the podcast. And drop a comment.
But the majority of this is looking at China, looking at the weekend. So what we've decided to do, we're going to break it down into each team. Mm-hmm. So we're going to talk about each team, talk about their weekend overall, because I realised last week we may have confused you because we were going from one bit to another bit to another bit and it was just a bit chaotic. So we're going to break down each team and just talk about their weekend. And at the end of it, we're going to tell you guys who our driver of the day is, and we want you guys to get involved and drop a comment if you're watching on YouTube.
What I should say, there's a very controversial point around this. If you haven't seen who driver of the day is, stay tuned because I think there's a hot topic coming up.
Again, We took stick last week. We said, you know, Lando Norris was our driver of the day. Well, how can Lando be your driver of the day? You know, and I was like, what?
Controlled a race incredibly well in tough conditions. Went on to win first race of the season. Lando was driver of the day last week, but we did give honourable mentions to Kimi Antonelli and someone else who I can't remember. But
Max.
Yeah, Max was great.
I'm hoping this week I don't take so much stick. That's what I'm hoping for. But anyway, let's get into it. So which team do you want to start from? Do you want to start backwards and lead up to McLaren?
Yeah.
So let's start off with Sauber, shall we? Tough weekend for them. I mean, when you look in the spring qualifying, Bortoleto out-qualified Hülkenberg again.
Which I think everyone was a little bit surprised about.
We were obviously shocked when that happened in Australia. But to do it again, we were kind of thinking, okay, what's going on here? The sprint was okay. Well, not really. They finished P18, P19. No, but Bortoleto did finish ahead of Hülkenberg again.
But look.
It's right, circumstantial.
We know that Sauber are going to have a tough season. I honestly don't think Hulk or Bortoleto are going to be thinking, what the hell is going wrong here? If you sign up to that project, I mean, firstly, like, Bortoleto would obviously sign up because he was in F2. Hülkenberg has signed up to that project thinking, this season is going to be awful.
It's all about
LG. Roll on 2026 and onwards. So, yeah, I think for them, it's going to be a season of just, you know, really improving themselves as drivers, Bortoleto finding his feet, and just preparing yourself for 2026 so you are at the peak of your performance and able to maximise that.
Yeah, and heading into qualifying, Hülkenberg out-qualified Bortoleto, P12 for him, looked good.
Which is not bad because that car is poor.
No, it is, and Bortoleto was P19. But, you know, the race was tough for both of them. Obviously, Bortoleto spun.
Yep, very early on.
That pretty much cost him his race. But I think for Bortoleto, we've already seen, and I don't know about you, but for me, even in the last couple of races, I've seen a lot of positives from Bortoleto to think, actually, this driver has got something about him. And actually, I'm not overly concerned. We know the car isn't great. We know that they'll pick up these odd few points, you know, like they did, Hülkenberg did last week in Australia.
I actually don't think they will. I think that was bit of an anomaly.
Yeah, but I think there'll be races throughout the year where they'll be able to pick up these, you know, circumstantial points as such. So I think Bortoleto is showing, you know, he finished P17 today.
I mean look, just out qualifying Hulk, you know, not once but twice, granted once in a sprint race.
Yeah.
Is impressive. It you know, Hulk's a great driver. We've given him a lot of credit, and I'm not taking anything away from him. I'm saying the fact that Bortoleto has been able to out-qualify him twice is impressive.
Yeah.
And I think it shows, you know, he won F2 last year and he looked really good. If you watched any of the F2 season last year, he looked really good. And I think now you're kind of seeing why they took the punt on him.
No, I agree. You know, so race-wise, Bortoleto P17, Hülkenberg P18. Yep. Kind of what we expected from Sauber to be where, you know, where they are.
All of these cars over one lap confused the hell out of me because I feel like you can never determine who's going to do well over one lap.
No.
Like, you know, obviously you've got the front runners, but then, you know, and I know we're not talking RB, but I'm just saying all of a sudden you have an RB like thrown in to like P3 or P4 or whatever, and they're really, really fast in these quali sessions. Race pace, it all, like, the cars get exposed, and that's where your Saubers do end up dropping back through the grid.
Yeah. And, you know, as we said, the fact that they both finished their race today, you know, again, it's just more and more experience for, yeah, I suppose both of them. They're both in a new team. You know, for Bortoleto, it is just gaining as much experience as possible until their car, you know, he gets a competitive car as such.
Next season, hopefully.
Yeah. So, you know, relatively okay for Bortoleto and Sauber today. But Haas next, should we talk about Haas? They had a very, very...
bit of a topsy-turvy weekend.
It was. Obviously, the big surprise, Behrmann out-qualified Ocon in spring qualifying, and obviously finished ahead of him in the race as well.
I've got to say something on this, because obviously, I would like to say I have not given Behrmann a hard time at all, because every time I've spoken about him and my doubts about him, I have always backed him in the sense where I say, I really want him to do well. He made me eat my words today. And I'm happy with that. You know, I said, I want him to make me look stupid.
Yeah.
And today, particularly today, as in the race, he looked class. I loved it. And sure, I loved his little chow thing. I don't know where it came from, but it was making me laugh. And yeah, so I'm really happy for Ollie Behrmann.
Yeah, you know, qualifying was tough for him. Qualified P17, went out in Q1. Ocon got into Q2, qualified in P11.
Did really well.
He did. And obviously these Haases, they're really unpredictable at the moment.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to gauge where they are, because obviously Haas last year did very well. They were fighting for P6 at the time with Alpine.
Towards the end of the season, especially, like, yeah, they were looking, everyone was like, oh, you know, Haas one to watch next season.
Yeah. So to actually come into this season, you're expecting them to be quite, you know, quite up there. But actually, last week was, again, circumstantial with weather and everything, but they haven't looked on it until
last
this week.
Weekend was poor.
It was. But heading into the race, Ocon looked good. Mm-hmm. He was in that P10 position, or he was in the top 10 for majority of the race. Yeah. They looked quick. Ollie Bearman came into the race. Obviously, starting P17 was always tough for him, but actually, you know, to end up finishing P10, picking up that one point, getting his first point for the season, is positive for him.
Strategy was good from them, and Ollie Bearman cut his way through. He had to overtake a lot of people.
Yeah, he did.
You know, to claw his way up there, and he did it really impressively.
But they're very mature overtakes. That's what I really liked. They were well planned. They're well executed, and he just looked very calm. He looked very. It was a very mature drive for an 18-year-old.
And like I say, I know it's only one race, but you know what? I'm firm in it. Like, I take back what I said. Mm. I actually think, after seeing that, I think he's got that dog in him, you know.
Yeah.
And I think he's actually going to do well this season.
Ocon P7 again, solid performance from Ocon.
That's really good points for Haas.
Yeah, really positive. So overall, really impressed with Haas today. They look good.
I don't think Haas are one of those teams that you have to consider are going to be really dedicating resources to next year.
Yeah.
Because they don't have the same budget as, I know there's a budget cap and everything, but they don't have the same disposable finances that the big teams have. Mm. So, you know, maybe it was foolish of everyone to think, oh, you know, they looked really good in 2024. 2025, they could look, you know, take even another better. Step. Maybe they've come into this season, they've had to think, you know, we've really got to start prioritizing 2026 here. And that's maybe why we're seeing a bit of a fluctuation, and we're not seeing, we didn't see the jump that I think we expected from Haas, given the momentum last season, but I completely get it. And I still think they're in a fairly decent position.
Yeah, it's weird. I think a lot of people also expected Haas to do well with regards to where they are with their, just in general, you know, this is a team now actually financially in a far better place. This is the first year that Gene Haas hasn't had to put his own money into the team. Mm. You know, they're more sustainable than they have been over the last few years. So I think as fans, we were expecting them to be like, okay, well, they're actually in a much better position. They did well last year. They must obviously be doing well. And they may do. It's only race two, but
yeah, no, look, they had a poor race one.
A lot of people did.
It's still very hard to gauge. Like I said, I do think this generation of car has been so unpredictable.
Mm.
Very rarely have you been able to predict how well a car is going to do. You know, take out the 2023 season where you knew Max was going to be quick no matter where he was. Realistically, like, think of the Mercedes. Oh my God, so, you know, on occasion they've been the fastest car, like, easily. Then you look at the Ferrari. Sometimes they've been blitzing it, and then the next track they'll be awful, and it's like, it's so hard to get a grasp of these cars. So I think it is going to be a topsy-turvy season, because we never truly know where we stand with these cars, because track to track it's completely different.
Before we get onto another team, I know, going back to what we said about the race earlier, what is really disappointing, obviously today had the opportunity to be a really good race, but the thing that let it down was the fact that teams only did one stop. You know, these tyres, we talk about, you know, they talk about the fact that actually it's a two stop, these tyres aren't really lasting well, that, you know, they're going to have to make changes, it could be the overcut, could be the undercut, that makes a difference for how the, you know, race finishes. We get to a point where we're like lap 30 in or something, and it was like, oh yeah, we'll just go to the end. So no one's making any changes, and that's why realistically it wasn't that exciting towards the end.
The tyres, I feel as fans will all agree, have the reliability is unbelievable, by the way. Like it's incredible that Pirelli have been able to get the tyres to this point where it's like, they're like bulletproof. It makes for worse racing. And I'm sorry if you disagree, but it does, because most races you can pretty much guarantee a one stop is absolutely fine. Tires don't really fall off a cliff, in my opinion. We rarely see blowouts. And I do think that something needs to be done about the racing in general, because today was a boring race, right? Granted, if you're an Oscar fan, you probably loved it. And, you know, if you're watching Ollie Bearman, but as a race, as a whole, it was a boring race. Very little overtaking. It was all very predictable. Pretty much everyone did a one-stop. Lewis tried the two-stop. There are a few in the back that were doing the two-stop. Boring. I still stand by it. Bring back refueling. And let's not worry about tyre degradation. I remember reading... it might have been a tweet from Jeremy Clarkson or something, saying, I don't want to watch race car drivers, like, you know, ease their way around a track managing tyres. I want to see them going flat out every lap, come in, pit when they need to, get fresh tyres, get back out there. And, like, I think if you had tyres that degrade a bit more, you'd probably get that. And I think if you then bring in the refueling element, all of a sudden it becomes super unpredictable because the strategies are infinite. And I think that is something they need to look into, because there's...
Well, it makes the strategy completely different, doesn't it? You know, you start the race a bit lighter fuel. How far you go, get a good gap.
Everyone is always going to go on the same strategy now. I think that's the biggest issue that we have with the current setup of tyres being so, so good and reliable. And obviously not having refueling. You all just have the amount of fuel that you need to get to the end. I would just like them to do something, because in a race like today where there wasn't a great deal of overtaking towards the front of the pack.
But you had the opportunity for there to be some good overtaking, some good undercuts, some good overcuts, because the teams were much closer today.
Well, had we have had to pit more? Yeah, absolutely. So I just think they should look at doing something, because if we're not going to get on track racing... It would be great to have strategy racing, because that's just as exciting.
Well, that's exactly why they put a 2 pit stop at Monaco, because they're very well aware that actually you just put one set on.
Yeah, you just watching one cars pit go around
and that was it.
Yeah.
But yeah, today had the potential to be a very good race if the pit stops were, the tyres degraded more and we had to do the two stops. But yeah, do let us know what your thoughts are on that, because I know we've spoken about refueling before and a lot of people have given us sticks saying, well, it's a health and safety risk, or, you know, that's why they got rid of it. I understand, but this is racing and you want to see the cars go flat out, because that's what you want.
That's like saying, like, oh, you know, they shouldn't take corners at 350 kilometres an hour. It's a health and safety risk. Yeah, well, like, it is. But like, everything in F1 is a safety risk. Trust me, like... Even just being part of the pit crew, that is a health and safety risk. But I don't know, like, if making the sport safer in that sense is a clever idea. Obviously, protect everyone in the sport. But it comes a balance of, like, these things are important to the sport. And, you know, a lot of that is attached to risk. That is just the nature of it.
Do let us know. Get involved. Comment below. Right, where should we go next? Should we go Aston Martin?
Yeah. Tricky.
Tricky weekend for them. Stroll, you know, we've said on this podcast many times, and granted, he did finish P12 today, but he looks like he has a bit more of a appetite for this year.
He's got a bit more zing to him.
Yeah, I know. We've given him... We've given some constructive opinions.
No, we've laid into him quite a lot.
Okay, we've been pretty brutal. Just from the fact that he doesn't look interested. However, he picked up points last week in Melbourne. This week, finished P12. But he seems to be a bit more... I think he was holding up the Mercedes, the McLaren today. He had a bit more of a fight in him.
A rocket up his arse. I think, for me... I think what gave me the first indication of that was last week, was it when he qualified or when he got into Q3 and he sounded happy.
Yeah.
Like buzzing. He was gassed with it. And I thought, okay, I don't think I've seen that for a long time in Lance Stroll. And then, yeah, you saw his racing today and it looked like he wasn't just out for a Sunday drive. It looked like he was racing. And yeah, you know, I'm happy for him. If he's happy in that car and he's really, you know, starting to kick it up, he's looked better than Alonso so far this season, which is a difficult thing to do.
Yeah.
Granted, it's only two races in. Don't get upset, Alonso fans. I know you're very emotional, but it's just positive for Lance Stroll. And I think it's also good for Aston Martin. They're doing all this stuff behind the scenes, investing so much in infrastructure, investing so much in Adrian Newey, whose pay is on par with some of the top paid drivers. Mm. I think he's actually earning more than Fernando Alonso. So you need a team that's going to kick along with that. And I think, yeah, if Lance Stroll can find his feet, there's no reason why he's not a good asset to the team.
No, I agree. Right. Yeah, Alonso struggled today. I take that back. He didn't struggle. He had his brake failure. So yeah, he did struggle then, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, he would have struggled if he had tried to carry on.
Exactly, racing exactly. Like that. So that's what I mean. He struggled today.
Alonso has got to be one of the most cursed men in F1.
Yeah.
I know he's got two world championships, but it's never gone right for him.
No.
And you know, I often think, like, if he had made the right choices, how many world championships would he have? Is it a case of actually he was never, this is going to upset people, I'm not saying this, I'm speculating. Is it a case of he was never as good as we maybe thought he was? You know, Lewis came in as a rookie. He didn't look any better than Lewis. He then obviously ran away from the team and went to Renault. That went wrong for him. Ferrari, and ever since then, career choice after career choice has just seemed to not work out for him. And that's why I think, like, is he cursed? You know, he got pretty close at Ferrari to winning a championship, but he went back to McLaren eventually and that really did not work out. Alpine move didn't work out. The Aston Martin move was sort of on the cusp of working out and then didn't. I just think, like, how many world championships could Fernando Alonso have won had he have made the right career choices? Because sometimes it is all about that. Let's not forget, if Lewis Hamilton hadn't made that choice, which at the time everyone thought was stupid, so if he hadn't have made that stupid choice to go to Mercedes, how many world championships would he have?
Yeah, valid point. Do let us know. Do get involved with that. Look forward to the comments for that.
Like I say, I think Fernando Alonso is an unbelievable driver. Mm. And I've never said otherwise.
No.
I just think...
I can back that, he hasn't.
Is he as good as maybe people think he is? Mm. Or is it purely down to these unfortunate career choices that he's made, where he's always seemed to be in the wrong place at the wrong time?
Yeah. Right, that's what we've said, haven't we? There's drivers out there who have made the wrong choices, and Fernando, you know, he went to that McLaren at the time for his second stint. There was just woeful, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was like, and then what? I guess he wanted to revive himself and went to Alpine. Obviously, the Renault connection turned out poor. Aston Martin. Yeah, I mean, look, he got a few podiums. Great, but...
He's never been off it.
Yeah, and you know, he kind of cursed himself a little bit when he said this will be the last time you won't see us on the podium. And we haven't seen him since. And that was 2023. So...
You've cursed yourself there.
That's why it's best to just shut up. Just don't say anything.
Right, let's move on to Alpine. Alpine had a tough weekend this weekend. Race ended up finished doing P16, Gasly P11. Gasly took that car as far as he could.
Gasly is looking strong this season, in my opinion. Just as a driver, I don't think he's got the machinery that he needs, but But to me, he looks just strong.
He's delivering what he can with what he's got.
Yeah.
And that's very, very evident. However, one person who is not delivering with everything he's got is Jack Doohan. Another difficult weekend in the sprint race. He got a 10-second penalty plus 2 points for his license after coming together with, Hadjar.
When he locked up into the hairpin and...
So, yeah. Tough weekend. And then again, another 10-second penalty today, which made him...
It was the 10-second penalty that he got today, sorry. In the Hadjar collision.
Yeah. But I'm talking about the other one he got in the sprint. Tough weekend for Jack Doohan, P16. The difficulty is with Jack Doohan at the moment is it's only race two. But even this weekend, there was reports that Briatore was saying... Yeah, you could see Colapinto in a car sooner than people think. Maybe not. Maybe you will. Those type of comments are never going to help your driver, are they?
It is absolutely not what he needs. And look, I know I've upset Colapinto fans before. We made up. That was nice. But Colapinto is going to be knocking at the door pretty soon if Jack Doohan doesn't pick it up.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I agree with it, but this is the situation. And he has to realise that. The problem is it's kind of like, don't know what the word is, but he kind of has to perform. But the more pressure he's got on him to perform, the harder it is going to be to perform.
Yeah. And I think when you look at this weekend, so sprint qualifying, he out-qualified Gasly, P16. Into the race, obviously, Jack Doohan finished P20. Came into actual qualifying, Jack Doohan P18. And then again today, he... finished P16. I think it's one of those, isn't it, where you look at it and go, Australia, he didn't finish. Today, he finished a race, more experience under his belt. But it gets to a point, isn't it, after race two, you're in a team where you're not going to be nurtured, you're not going to be babied, you're going to be like, if you don't perform, you're out, because you've got Briatore there who... he won't take fools.
But that's the thing. I think it's kind of... I feel like Colapinto will be nurtured there. I feel like they've kind of got their favourite in their mind. And they want Colapinto in that seat. But they'd already put Doohan in there. And I feel like he's not going to get the support he needs because they kind of want him out anyway. And I don't agree with it. I feel like if you've got a driver in, just support him. Like,
yeah.
There's no saying that Doohan can't be a good driver. And you have to remember, this is Alpine. They're not Ferrari. They're not McLaren. Mm. They're not going to be getting world beaters. They're not going to be getting points every single weekend at this point in time with this car because it's just not good enough. But that being said, you still need someone in that seat who is going to maximise what you get out of that car. And you get that from someone like Gasly. We haven't seen that from Doohan right now. It's only two races in. But it's definitely possible that his career could be even shorter than Liam Lawson's.
Mm. We'll get on to that shortly. Anyway, I've got a good question for you. RBs.
They look great over one lap and then average in the race.
When you look at sprint qualifying, Tsunoda once again into Q3. Hadjar... He got into Q2 but didn't set a time. Mm-hmm. But actually in the sprint, you know, Tsunoda picking up 3 points for them again, finishing P6. Hadjar was P13. But you get to qualifying. Both the RBs got in to Q3. Hadjar P7, Tsunoda P9. Solid for Hadjar. You know,
it's not often that Tsunoda gets out qualified by a teammate.
No, 100%. And Hadjar needed that after last weekend. You know, after last weekend, you know, spinning it on the formation lap, then getting all those remarks from Helmut Marko. You know, he needed a performance this weekend to actually get things back on track. And putting it into Q3 is definitely a marker to show that actually I am here and I'm here to compete. The race didn't end well for them. And I don't know whether that's just a fact of poor strategy. You know, Tsunoda probably would have finished in the points if his wing didn't decide just to give up.
Yeah, that was crazy, by the way. What the hell happened there? Crofty confusing the hell out of everyone. Needs to up his game, right? Because he was talking about Hadjar on a broken wing from the Doohan incident. Turns out it was Tsunoda in the end, and it was nothing to do with a collision. He needs to sort it out. I'm putting that out there. But what the hell? How can that just break?
It is weird. But Tsunoda ends up finishing P19, Hadjar P14.
I do think to some extent they had almost ruined the race for themselves a little bit by pushing very early with the two-stop strategy.
Yeah.
Rather than sort of trying to suss out. And I get it, it was a gamble. But I feel like when you're in that position as a team like RB, should probably try and follow what the front runners are doing and don't pull the trigger first because you don't need to.
No, especially when you've got teams like Sauber and that lot who will do that for you anyway.
Exactly.
And I think, you know, Tsunoda again this weekend, for me, and I've said this before, I'm a big Yuki fan. He just showed his quality. Yeah, okay, finishing P19 is not a true reflection of what he was actually, what his actually racecraft was this weekend. But
yeah, I mean, obviously, like, that wing got him shafted. Yeah.
But up until that point, he was pushing, and maybe he would have got maybe a P9 or P10 at that point. But no, shame for Yuki, shame for Hadjar, but I think there's been a lot of positives to take away from this weekend, especially with the qualifying pace. Obviously, Yuki picking up points in the sprint race as well. There is positives to take.
Yeah, they'll be happier this weekend, and they should be. Hmm. I think the big thing they've got to think about is who are they going to replace Yuki Tsunoda with when he goes up to Red Bull?
We may as well touch on this now, actually.
Well, we can go on to Red Bull next so we can make the transition seamless, but let's...
I don't want Yuki to go to Red Bull now.
Well, because you think that second seat is cursed.
That second seat is cursed. I do not want Yuki anywhere near that second Red Bull seat because, yeah, let's touch on Red Bull because Liam Lawson is having...
He's having the stinker of all stinkers.
And
can I just say, last season, it really wound me up how Checo would come out and constantly blame something, anything but himself. He never took responsibility. That wound me up so much. It would always be the car this, the team that, oh, this happened. When you've got Max qualifying P1 or P2, P3, nothing angered me more, right? Liam Lawson came out in his qualifying interview. He did mention some bits about the car, but he said, look, ultimately, it's no excuse. I've got to do better. It is unacceptable. And I rated that. I rated the fact that he came out and said, this is on me. He was like, I need time to, you know, I need time to build up confidence in the car and learn it. But he was like, unfortunately, I don't have time.
It's got to be quick.
And I've got to sort it out. That's fair enough. That's the exact response you want to see from a driver. If he came out and was just like, yeah, the car is so difficult to drive, like, this was happening, that was happening, I would have been like, nah, not having that. Because, granted, new car for you. Everyone's always said this car is very tricky to drive because Max has a very unique driving style. It's just not an excuse.
No. You know, spring qualifying, Liam, P20. Sprint race, he ended up finishing, where did he finish? P14. Qualifying again, P20. Today, he ended up finishing P15. I mean, really, especially when you see Max Verstappen, you know.
Max looked great towards the end of the race today, by the way.
He did. He had the pace. But he looked good in the sprint race. Okay, he finished P3. He qualified P2. You know, he looked good. He looked good on weekend, but that's Max Verstappen getting everything out of that car. And I suppose, you know, with Liam Lawson at the moment, and I agree with you, I respect him for coming out and saying, look, this is on me. I've got to get up to scratch. Because he is in a very fast car, but he is not delivering. And he is looking like someone who he can't handle that car at all. And the worry is it going to get better?
I'd go as far as saying he's doing a worse job so far than Checo would have done this season.
Yeah, I mean,
there's no way Checo qualifies P20 in the two races.
No.
No way.
All right.
I'm not saying he's going to get out of Q1, but there's no way.
So this is, I've got a little fact for you.
A fact. Okay.
So Nikita Mazepin's average starting position in his first three races for Haas was 19.33. So around P19 or so. Liam Lawson's average starting position in his first three races at Red Bull, 19.67.
Yeah, and that's
And when we say three races, I know people go, well, there's only been, but we're talking about the spring qualifying as well.
Mazepin was shocking. But
should we send that to Helmut Marko and go, look, you know, here's your next driver.
Get Nikita in. But that Haas, oh my God, that was the worst car. One of the worst cars ever. There's no excuse from Liam Lawson, but like I say, I like the fact that he came out and basically said, yeah, there's no excuse. I have to do better. Mm. This is unacceptable.
Especially, you know, if you're Helmut Marko and you've been given comments about Bortoletto and he's out qualifying your driver.
In a Sauber.
And, you know, people like Hadjar is out qualifying your driver and getting into Q3. It's embarrassing.
This is what I say. Everyone talks about Helmut Marko and, oh, you know, how good he is for the sport. Like, look at all these. His talent ID is not as good as what people make out. Mm. Realistically, you know, over the years, Seb, Sainz, Max. You know, okay, he's brought in, and realistically, like, Seb and Max, obviously, on a different level to any of those drivers, but it's not been that great. No. I mean, you know, it's brought through decent drivers. So I think when he says things, I kind of think, like, how much does this guy really know?
Yeah.
More than me. Don't worry, I know that.
Do you want another fact?
Yeah.
So Liam Lawson hasn't out-qualified Yuki Tsunoda in 772 days. The last time was 2023 in Singapore. Granted, Liam Lawson has had half season. He hasn't been in, done full seasons.
Yeah, but Liam Lawson has had three opportunities to out-qualify him in a Red Bull. Mm. So that is, you know, it's poor. And I hope for Liam's sake that he's able to turn out. People are calling him Liability Lawson on TikTok.
That's not a name you want.
Did you see Ted Kravitz to Christian Horner?
Yeah.
Basically saying, like, what's going on? You didn't pay Checo all that money to have this, did you? My God. He said it straight to his face.
Ted Kravitz is a national treasure.
Yeah.
And he should be protected at all costs.
Straight talking. Doesn't mince his words. He asked the question that, firstly, all the other presenters, everyone else at Sky Sports or in any other media corporation would be too scared to ask. He said it and he spoke for the fans. We all thought it. He got it to Christian Horner. And I respect it. I bet Horner's head was hot when that question came in. You could see, like, he didn't really know what to do. I bet he went into, like, an office and just, like, punching a wall.
Next Drive to Survive episode, that Ted Kravitz, get him out.
It's just, like, behind the scenes and Horner's got him in a headlock.
You know, you heard in last year's, or this year's episodes was, Zach Brown, he's a prick. You're going to hear Ted Kravitz, what a prick.
Ted's a prick.
Yeah, can't wait. But, quick question for you, and I saw this one. And this was asked on our TikTok. So,
which is at Boxbox Clips if you want to follow us. You should. We've got like 18,000 of you there. So
join us. Who lasts longer, Jack Doohan in the Alpine or Liam Lawson in the Red Bull?
Yeah, this is a tricky one. And I think Liam Lawson will last longer. Only because for Jack Doohan, the writing was on the wall before
Australia.
Yeah, before he even, you know, before the season even started. You know, Jack Doohan has probably got till Miami, realistically. I think Liam Lawson will get half the season. Unless he is literally, you know, if we get to, where are we next? Japan. Mm. If we get to Japan and he's a P20 or out in Q1, and then we get to Saudi, is it? And he's in the same position. My God, it's going to get... Red Bull will have to be decisive because there's places in the constructors for them here. Hmm. You know, Max has done great. Max got a P2 last week. He was very fast towards the end of the race today. They don't need someone to match Max, but they need someone that is going to be there or thereabouts a lot of the time. You know, imagine if you had Yuki in that seat and he picked up P7 today, P6. Mm. Great, that's an extra haul of points. The same in the sprint race, the same last week. All of a sudden, Red Bull are in the mix for the constructors. But they're not going to do it this season with Max Verstappen alone, because it's not 2023. He's not going to win every single race, and it's just going to ruin them.
And that gap will spread very, very quick in the constructors if you do not have your second driver picking up points.
And what they did last season was they left it for too long.
Yeah.
And that ruined their season.
100%.
And, you know, they needed to be more decisive on Checo. He should have never got that contract extension in Monaco anyway. There's no way that should have happened. That was a big mistake. They then held on to him for way too long. Mm. And, yeah, what finished P3 in the constructors in the end.
Yeah.
When they if they had a second driver, they would have won.
Do let us know who lasts longer, Jack Doohan or Liam Lawson. But Max Verstappen this weekend, very, very solid. He maximised everything he could out of that Red Bull.
I like the pun.
I didn't think of that. He was pretty honest after qualifying that actually he would need the other teams to retire if there's any chance of him winning the race. And we saw that today. He struggled through the first part of the race, but came to in the second part, and he really pushed that car to where coming away with a P4 is pretty impressive, considering we thought Ferrari were going to be relatively strong in the race today.
You know, he ended up overtaking Charles Leclerc, he was going to overtake Lewis Hamilton 100%, but then to go and take Charles, now that was impressive from Max.
No, Max did everything he needed to today to pick up the maximum amount of points he could for the team. And like you say, the disappointing thing is you haven't got that second driver at the moment picking up those points.
You know what? We got a comment on the last episode, actually.
Mm.
Along the lines of us, you know, like glazing. RB. This comment said, "You think RB should have been P5, P6? I assume he's talking Red Bull here because it's talking about Max. So you think Merck, Williams, and I'm guessing Ferrari are faster? No, just Ferrari and McLaren.
Yeah.
And like the Merck.
Where did Williams come
from? Merck is probably on. Yeah, I mean, P5, P6, there's only four cars ahead of you. There's six there, and you haven't even mentioned McLaren. That is. Anyway, the Max hype is unbelievable. That RB is the second fastest car. It's just not true. And you mentioned this. The problem is RB is so tailored to Max's unique preference that the second driver will always struggle. I don't think that's true. Tsunoda essentially would suffer the same fate as Lawson, Gasly, Albon, Perez. This should be obvious by now. I'm sorry. I just disagree. Mm. Like, you're telling me that Max Verstappen is the only person in the world who can drive that Red Bull car. I just think that is the laziest argument for why these second drivers aren't performing. Well, and I think Albon even backed that up. He went on the High Performance podcast. Mm. And he said, not really, like, I don't think the car is built around Max. He just said Max has a very unique driving style. And he has said before it was difficult because it's very sensitive on the front end. But I'm sorry, Max Verstappen is pulling absolutely everything out of that car. I'm not a Max fan. I'm a Lewis fan. Do you think I enjoy sitting here praising Max Verstappen every week? Every time I do, I think back to 2021.
And then you get triggered.
Like, it's not something I enjoy doing, but I'm going to sit here and talk about him impartially. I'm not going to sit here and lie and act like he isn't an unbelievable driver. And
he's been phenomenal.
That Red Bull is not the second quickest car on the grid. I'm sorry.
And we've said, if it wasn't Max in that Red Bull seat last year, McLaren would have won the drivers and the constructors. It was Max Verstappen who pulled everything out of that Red Bull to go on and win his fourth.
We've also said, in 2023, if it wasn't Max in that seat, they wouldn't have had as many wins as they had.
No. Do get involved about Red Bull and let us know what your thoughts are on Liam, Max. But overall, Red Bull probably be relatively happy with that this weekend. Well, with regards to Max Verstappen.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tricky one, isn't it? Like,
you're happy with Max getting as much as he can, but Liam, you're going to be questioning things.
You're under pressure, boy.
Yeah. Let's go back to Williams. So, tough weekend for Carlos Sainz. And this is really baffling me because we spoke before the season started and we were like adamant that Sainz would be walking away with it.
In fairness, I don't think I ever said that. I said I expected Sainz to be better than Albon.
Yeah.
I just said this season we might see Albon get exposed.
Yeah.
And so far, we absolutely haven't. He's looked like the stronger driver, obviously. I mean, Sainz is unlucky last week. A lot of drivers crashed out in the wet. But Albon looked very comfortable all weekend in comparison to Sainz.
Yeah, Albon, spring qualifying, got into Q3. Sainz went out in Q2. In the race, Albon ended up finishing P11. But when you get to qualifying, obviously, Albon put it in P10, Q3 again. Another elimination for Carlos Sainz in Q2.
But again, we should say it's so tight. He was only 0.2 off Albon. Yeah. It's tricky because qualifying, in this new era of car, has been so tight. It's been fine margins that have really mattered. And, ultimately 0.2 cost him, 5 or 6 positions to his teammates. So,
but even in the race day, Carlos Sainz, he was just in a race on his own. He ended up finishing P13, and every time you saw him, he just looked like he was just challenging, just driving around on his own, having a nice little Sunday drive.
He had a boring day, and he finished 20 seconds behind his teammate.
But Alex Albon picking up a P9, picking up getting again a couple of points for the team.
Think the Williams again falls into that category of AI is still a little bit confusing. Is the car good? Is it bad? Is it okay? Yeah. I think Williams will have an all right season, and I have all the faith in the world that Carlos Sainz will have a decent season.
Yeah.
He might just not have as decent season as we thought he was going to have.
No.
But again, we know Williams is the 2026 project.
Yeah.
It's not about this year, but they did need to take a step forward. And I would say so far, it does look like they have taken a step forward still.
No, I agree. Right, three teams left. Ferrari, Mercedes, McLaren. Where do you want to go?
Let's go Mercedes, because they're the only team that didn't win anything this weekend out of those three.
Yeah. Sprint quali, Russell 5th, Antonelli 7th in this actual sprint. George Russell picking up 5 points in P4. Antonelli again picking up a couple of points in P7. Qualifying, well, George Russell split the McLarens, which I don't think anyone expected.
And very, very impressive lap.
Very impressive, yeah. And it was only 1/10 behind Piastri.
Yeah, it was 0.08, wasn't it?
Yeah, putting it on P2. Solid weekend for him. And Antonelli, again, getting into Q3. With Antonelli, obviously, it's one of those, actually, could he have done a bit more? But again, second race, it was a solid weekend for him.
It wasn't as electric as last weekend for him, and that's fine. He is a rookie, true rookie. And, China's a difficult track.
Yeah.
Let's not forget that. I think he did absolutely fine. He's an 18-year-old boy. A boy, not a man. He's 18 years old. He's so young. He's come in with a lot of expectation on him. He is racing for an extremely good team against a very good teammate.
Yeah.
You're going to expect George Russell to outperform him this season. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I don't think there was anything wrong with Kimi Antonelli's performance this week. But what I will say is, you tell me that he was given driver of the day.
He did, but I was going to get onto this a bit later when we give our driver of the day.
Okay, well, we've got a controversial topic coming up there, so make sure you stay tuned.
So George Russell finished P3, 11 seconds behind Oscar Piastri, which, again, the racing is actually a lot closer. And
11 seconds? How's that close?
Well, it's not 20, 30 seconds like we have been.
Well, occasionally. I'd like it to be a little bit closer than 11 seconds.
Well, this is what I said earlier on.
You can do a lot in 11 seconds, you know.
Yeah.
What can you do in 11 seconds?
Run downstairs, get a drink, back up.
Make a baby.
What are you looking at me for? I'm not.
No, but you could.
You could, yes, you could.
Do you know what I mean?
Comment down below, what else could you do in 11 seconds? But what I meant, throughout the race, generally, whenever there was any shots, you could see the cars in the distance. It was closer. The end, I think what happened was everyone was just basically struggling with their one-stop tyres. That's why the gap was maybe a bit bigger than
that. Piastri obviously had clean air the whole race. Yeah. So his tyres were going to be in better condition than everyone else's.
But George Russell, solid P3 for him. And I don't think anyone expected him to get P3 this weekend.
No one expected him to get it last weekend either.
No.
It's two podiums in a row for him.
Impressive.
He's in a championship battle at the moment. Mm.
Antonelli P8. Again, three points for him. Finished another race finished. More experience behind his belt. He was consistent.
It's good for him. Antonelli had an absolutely fine weekend. Mm. That's it. I wouldn't say he had a great weekend. He certainly didn't have a bad weekend. It's what Mercedes will be very happy with how their weekend went.
Yeah, no, I agree. Ferrari next.
Now we are happy with this. Sir Lewis Hamilton getting his first win in red. Granted, it was a sprint race. Doesn't matter.
Still a win.
It is a win, and it was good. It was also an emphatic win. You know, he won it by 6-7 seconds in a 19-lap race.
And then just to add to that, that was him also, you know, playing a part in keeping Max closer so he could damage his tyres more. So actually, the gap may have even been bigger.
Yeah, so if you don't know what we're talking about, Fred Vasseur came out after that race and said, yeah, basically, Lewis kept Max close to him for a period of time to ensure that Max was hurting his tyres. And then we saw that. Piastri then got Max, and Lewis just dashed off down the road.
Yeah.
So that's when you saw his true pace come alive. And Leclerc was obviously, for the best part of the weekend, Leclerc was off Lewis. Mm. You know, obviously, I know that that's different in the race. Charles looked great in the race, especially with a broken wing. But I think the most confusing thing about the Ferraris was, where did that pace go?
Yeah. Because they looked so good in the sprint.
Lewis in the sprint, I absolutely controlled it. No worries whatsoever. You know, in sprint quali, they were up there. Mm. Obviously, Lewis qualified P1, but like through the whole session, it was like, oh my God, like it's flip-flopping between 1, 2, and 3. Like, you don't know who's going to be there. We come to qualifying.
Pace is gone.
The pace, and I know it was only two and a half tenths off, but...
Because my initial thought was actually, okay, they've set up more for the race, because that was a lot of speculation. Actually, the reason why they end up finishing qualifying P5 and P6 was actually their race setup was better rather than the qualifying setup.
But if that was the case, right, which it wasn't, because we saw race pace was not special at all, do you not think there would have been some learnings to take from the sprint? That actually overtaking looked quite difficult for the front runners, you know, those in the quicker cars. It looked like it wasn't really happening much.
No.
So, yeah, I think track position would have been so important, which sounds weird at a track like China, because there's great overtaking opportunities, but you saw very little overtaking between the top guys. So I think you should have set up for that one lap pace.
Yeah, but obviously then they got into the race. Leclerc almost took out Hamilton on lap one. That was close.
That was a little bit silly from Charles, because it could have done more damage to his front wing, which, to be fair, it seemed like it actually helped him out in the race. And it could have very easily given Lewis a puncture.
Yeah.
And you know, I love Charles. I really do, and I want to see them both do really well this season. I know I'm a Lewis fan, but I will be backing them both. But that was a little bit silly.
Yeah.
And obviously he did also get a little bit aggressive at Australia. And I understand it, because Lewis Hamilton coming into the team, that sort of... Charles really has to assert his dominance, because Lewis does that naturally.
Yeah.
He doesn't have to come in and be like, I'm going to show I'm the top guy here. He's got 7 world championships that do the talking for him. And Charles has always been the top dog at Ferrari since he's been there, even when Seb was there. And now he might be feeling a little bit threatened. And I feel like you've seen on track, maybe he's tried to assert his dominance. I just think they need to be careful, because Ferrari can win a Constructors this season. Mm. They really can.
I think what I liked about Ferrari, you know, today was the strategy calls were pretty on point. And that's, you can go back to when they told Leclerc and Hamilton to swap positions. Leclerc looked the faster car.
That made complete sense, by the way.
And we've been quite critical over the last couple of years, and even last week, that actually Ferrari strategy calls have been really quite poor and cost them a lot. But today, you know, that call just made sense, swapping Charles with Lewis, because then Charles was the quicker car. He couldn't quite get past George, but he got closer and he had the opportunity. The other call I really liked was actually with 16 laps to go. Okay, well, Lewis has been chased down by Max. Not really, he's in no man's land really. So what do we do? Let's just pit him. Let's try.
He essentially had a free pit stop, only losing the position to Max, who he was going to lose the position to anyway. So yeah, we called it at the time, didn't we? We said, surely it's worth just bringing Lewis in and taking the chance. The worst thing that happens is he loses a position that he's going to lose anyway.
Yeah.
Best case scenario is, actually, he can cut through the pack. People's tyres start dropping off. Obviously, it didn't happen that way, but the fact that they took the risk, I like that.
Mm.
My question to you.
Yep.
We speak about Ferrari swapping the cars. Should they have swapped back at the end? Because ultimately, Lewis let Charles to go ahead.
Yeah.
To see if he could go and overtake George. That didn't happen. Obviously, they both ultimately ended up losing places to Max as well. Now, Lewis pitted in the meantime, but should they have inverted the cars before the finish line?
If they hadn't pitted Lewis, I would have said yes. But the fact that they then completely swapped the strategy completely, I think it'd be a bit harsh to say to Leclerc, can you slow down and let, you know, Lewis pass?
Because I agree with that. I think if they hadn't have pitted Lewis, it would have... And I know it doesn't really make any difference at that points level, it's probably like a 1 point difference, but I feel like it would have made sense to swap them back had they'd just been both overtaken by Max on track, and that happened. But yeah, pitting Lewis completely changes the dynamic and the strategy. It's very hard to then argue, and also there's no saying that Charles wouldn't have overtaken Lewis on track. That absolutely could have happened, but if you take away that opportunity and swap the cars, you then have to be like, well, look, we made it easy for you to get in front, it didn't work out. Swap the positions back.
Yeah, no, I think if they hadn't pitted Lewis, I think yes, probably they should have. But look, it's 1 or 2 points. The only thing which, you know, with Ferrari this weekend is I like their strategy calls. I think they look quick. There's a lot of positives to take from it. So it's going to be interesting to see where they go from this, because I don't just think it's going to be McLaren dominance. I do think there's going to be other cars in there. And I think we do have a four car battle in some sense with Red Bull. They're still going to be there with Max Verstappen. Yeah. Okay, Max will be there. Mercedes look good. They'll win some races. Mm-hmm. McLaren's look great. But I do think Ferrari will pick it up. And I think they're on the right track. I do believe that.
Yeah, I mean, all you have to do is look at the sprint race. That's clear and obvious that they can do some damage this season.
And Lewis was positive afterwards, you know, coming over the radio saying, okay, you know, yeah, it may not be what we wanted, but there's a lot of positives to take out this weekend. Let's move forward with it. Do let us know about that. What's your thoughts? Should they have swapped position, or realistically, it doesn't make any difference? McLaren.
Almost the perfect weekend.
And I think when you look back at sprint qualifying, that was probably one of their bits where they struggled the most, sprint qualifying and the sprint race. Obviously, Piastri P3, Norris P6. Get to the race. Okay, when I say struggled this weekend, Piastri still came P2 in the sprint race. But Lando really struggled. And look, what I'm about to say, again, it's not me hating on Lando here, but Lando put himself in a very difficult place. You know, I know he started P6. He did have one of the faster cars of the weekend.
The fastest.
He has a fast car.
We can accept that the McLaren is still the fastest car. It might just not be as quick as we initially thought.
But you look at this whole weekend, okay. Sprint qualifying, didn't put in the laps to really put himself in a good position. Sprint race, almost went off track. Well, he did go off track.
Lando had too many errors this weekend.
And this is my point. Are we seeing these errors that are still happening from 2024, because you look at into qualifying, Q1 fastest car, Q2 fastest car, Q3 couldn't put it together, got out qualified by his teammates, and actually even George Russell. Come to today's race, solidish race. I know he had issues with his brake pedal at the come the end, but Piastri never looked under pressure from Lando.
No, and this is one thing that kind of bugs me about Lando, is he always acts like he's in a position where he can overtake Piastri. The team had come over radio and said, car in front. Don't know why they called him the car in front and not just Piastri. Like, Oscar's going to slow down to, like, help you along. And then Lando's saying, like, oh, he needs to speed up because I'm hurting my tyres here. And then it's kind of insinuating towards the end of the race that, oh, you know, I can go and get him here. But then he's got the issues with his brake pedals. And then the interview after the race kind of, like, avoided the question of whether he could go and get Oscar. And it's like, mate, you couldn't. Like, Oscar had the race completely under control from start to finish. And I feel like sometimes he just doesn't accept that he was second best.
No.
And today he was. And the whole weekend, actually, I saw a lot of last season's Lando in this weekend. And I don't want to see that.
No.
I said all through the winter break that I think Lando would have learned a lot from last season, and he's actually going to come out a lot more experienced this season. But this weekend, way too many errors. Way too errors that you would never see from someone like Max Verstappen, for example.
No, and that's what I mean. You know, you look at the qualifying yesterday, his Q1, Q2s was fastest, but then made an error and only put it on P3 in Q3. And these type of errors are the things that cost you points come the end of the season. And, you know, you look at Oscar Piastri today and all throughout the weekend, a very, very consistent drive.
Yep.
In qualifying, okay, you know, in the pole position was great. The race today, he didn't look phased. He looked very in control. And he's going along and doing what he needs to do. But for some reason, with Lando, there's still these errors this weekend. And look, it's only race two. I'm not saying that actually he can't go and he may be dominant the rest of the season. And, you know, we want to see these errors, you know, minimised by Lando, because we do think he has the opportunity to go on and win a championship. But these type of errors are the things that keep costing him.
And I know this will upset Lando fans like us talking about this, because it does. But like, I've always sat here and said, I think Lando's the quicker driver. Mm. I think Lando's quicker than Oscar. I think maybe he hasn't got the right mentality. Mm. But, you know, let's not be dramatic here. Lando's leading the world championship. He's got a P1, a P2. And granted, didn't pan out too well for him in the sprint race, but Lando is still on track. He is still favourite to win the championship this season. But just saying, he cannot continue. He can't have a lot of weekends like this weekend.
No.
Because it's not going to take a lot for that to really cost you. You know, he's lucky that it didn't cost him too much in the race. He is. And, you know, him and Piastri made the mistake last week in the wet. I know it was tricky conditions where they both went off track, and unfortunately for Piastri, he spun and got beached. That could have happened for Lando.
But also, you look at these sprint races. I know people say, oh, you know, he picked up a P2, you know, in the race, but actually he finished P8. He picked up 1 point in the sprint. These sprints are so key, because Max Verstappen, the reason why his points tally over the years have been so good,
because he wins every sprint,
because he picks up the points where he needs to in these sprints.
Lando could have had an extra 10 points this weekend.
Yeah, and that goes on to the standings. You know, Lando Norris is now there with 44 points. Okay, he ends up finishing what, P2 or P1 in that. He's over 50. He's over that 50 mark.
He's already building a bit of a gap.
Yeah, you know. So Lando Norris is in P1 with 44 points. Max Verstappen in P2 with 36 points. Russell 3 with 35 points. Piastri 10 points behind Lando with 34. That top four is so close.
It is.
And I know it's only race two, but that is close.
I'd love to see the Ferraris come into that mix as well.
No, three different constructors in there. Lewis Hamilton and Charles Leclerc is P6. Lewis Hamilton P7, 18 points, 17 points. But that can change, you know, very quickly.
Yeah, It can change very quickly, but it is important, even at this stage of the season, that you are maximising those points.
Yeah.
Because all it takes is a little gap, and it's very difficult to close that.
You look at Kimi, P5 with 18 points, a good start for him. But the constructors, this is how it looks. McLaren, P1 with 78 points. P2, Mercedes, 53 points. Red Bull in P3, well, just Max Verstappen, 36 points. Mm-hmm. Ferrari, P4 with 35 points. So it is, you know, it is close. Then you're looking at Williams P5, Aston Martin P6, and Alpine down there in P10 with 0 points. So it is close, mm-hmm. but it's kind of like, how do we? What Ferrari need to do to get back on track? You know, they had a positive weekend, but the race today was where they need to maximize their points as much as possible.
The thing is, I don't think this weekend was their problem. I think last weekend was their problem. Mm. If Ferrari didn't botch that strategy last week, you know, there's a they would be, you know, Lewis and Charles would be in the 20s on points.
Yeah.
So I don't think this weekend was the problem.
No.
I think Ferrari had a relatively good weekend. They'd probably just want to look at what happened between the sprint race and the race
to actually work
and find out. But yeah, positive weekend for Ferrari, really positive weekend for McLaren, and an enjoyable weekend nonetheless. The race was a touch boring. Even the sprint race was a touch boring, to be honest. Like, and Lewis won, so we were happy. But you know, from a fan perspective, generally, well, it wasn't the greatest weekend of racing.
No, obviously we got a week off now. Yes. From racing, not from the podcast.
Not us, we are here, don't worry.
And then we're back in Japan. We've got three back-to-back races, which I love. Right, who's your driver of the day? Because this is interesting. This goes back to what we said earlier on. Kimi Antonelli was voted driver of the day.
That is outrageous. There's no way Kimi Antonelli was driver of the day today. I'm sorry.
No, I would agree with that. Who was your driver of the day?
So it's a toss-up between Oscar Piastri.
Yeah.
And I was impressed with Ollie Bearman. I was. But I also, I think, you know, an honourable mention to Max Verstappen. Thought he did well to come through at the end. Ocon picked up P7. But yeah, I'd say it's between Oscar Piastri, who commanded that race from start to finish. Very impressive. And then I would say my sort of like other driver of the day, Ollie Bearman, because he was cutting through the pack. Nice.
Yeah. I mean, it would be very easy for me to say Oscar Piastri. As I said, very, very smooth drive. He commanded it very well. But for me, my driver of the day would actually have to be Ocon. I think he was solid throughout. He started P11, finished P7. Yeah, I'd probably go for Ocon. But again, it was close between Ocon and Bearman for me.
I don't understand the Kimi Antonelli one.
No.
I just don't. I love Kimi Antonelli, but there's no way he was driver of the day.
No. So you're saying Bearman?
I think Bearman. I mean, crazy that it's both the Hasses.
Yeah.
But I think realistically, driver of the day is Oscar Piastri. Like, But I'm saying it's so easy to go for like the guy at the front.
Yeah.
But he did command a lovely race, and it was never under pressure.
No, solid drive.
Zero mistakes.
Solid drive, for me, Piastri or Ocon. For you, Piastri, Bearman. Mm. Yeah. Do let us know who is your driver of the day for the Chinese Grand Prix. So, I think that's all things China. Would you like a couple of fan questions?
Yes, every week at the end of the podcast, we answer your questions that you gave us on Instagram. So we do a little story at BoxBoxPod. That's where you'll find us, and you can ask us any questions that we will answer during the podcast. So make sure you get involved.
So I can't pronounce this one because it's a very long one. They've asked, what would happen if Alonso and Hamilton were in the 25 McLaren, and who has the most luck in the World Championship?
Lewis wins that all day long.
Yeah.
Lewis matched Alonso in his rookie season.
I agree with you. Lewis Hamilton and Fernando Alonso were in this year's McLaren car, 100% it would be Lewis Hamilton. I'm not disagreeing with you on that one.
Yeah, I think it's a great question, but there's an easy answer to that. I'd be curious to know what you lot think at home, but at least, you know, don't just call us stupid. At least give us a reason for why you think it might be Alonso. But I mean, Lewis Hamilton has won 7 world championships. He's gone head to head with Fernando Alonso. Fernando Alonso had been in the sport for 5 or 6 years at the time, had 2 world championships. Lewis came in, you know, drew level on points with him in the season, then made him run away from the team. So,
yeah, I would agree. I can't see Fernando Alonso beating Lewis Hamilton if they were in that McLaren.
Yeah, not across the whole season. He would definitely win some races, 100%.
But not the championship.
Nah.
Do let us know. Right, Constructor Championship prediction. Who's your... This one is from Thomas Typical.
McLaren, Ferrari, Mercedes, Red Bull.
Okay.
Red Bull, like I said, they're not going to do it with just Max Verstappen.
No.
They're just not. It's not 2023. It won't happen. So, yeah, they're going to need to be decisive on Liam Lawson. Liam Lawson might... You know, it could just be 2 very unlucky races. He might absolutely come through, but Suzuka's not an easy track. Saudi's not an easy track. You know, it's not really until you get to Bahrain where it's a bit of a nicer track. So he's got 2 very tricky races coming up. And it could be getting very hairy for him. But yeah, McLaren do look like the strongest team. Without a shadow of a doubt. It's going to change throughout the season, I'm sure. I think Ferrari generally do look better than that Mercedes. Just. They had a howler in the first week with strategy. And they have got a stronger driver pairing that you would expect more out of them across the season. I think Mercedes will do very well. I'm not saying... I think it'll be close. I really do.
No, and so do I. I obviously said before the season started, my prediction for the constructors was Ferrari. I said that. I'm going to own my decision and stick with that, but I would not be surprised if it wasn't McLaren. McLaren.
I think Ferrari absolutely can.
But they need to turn it around quick. And when I say turn it around, I mean they need to start getting in those podiums. We need to start seeing Ferrari from, you know, Japan onwards, picking up those P2s, P3s, to be able to then say they're back in chance with a constructor's shot. But McLaren at this moment in time look levels apart.
Yeah.
This one's from Shuna. Will Lewis Hamilton's performance this weekend be enough to silence his critics?
Yeah. He won the sprint race very comfortably. Neither Ferrari had a great race. Charles looked quicker in the race. That is going to happen. I'm not sure what happened because Charles was nowhere near him for the rest of the weekend. But yeah, he won a sprint race. I don't know how anyone can be out there criticising Lewis this weekend.
No, I agree. That is the end of the podcast. And hopefully you guys enjoyed it. Thank you very much for listening. If you're watching on YouTube, do hit that like button. Subscribe if you are new. If you are listening to us, please go and leave us a 5-star rating, whether that's on Spotify, Apple Podcast. It really does mean a lot and we really do appreciate it.
Make sure you follow our Clips channel as well. There will be a link in the description down below where we upload shorter snippets of the podcast to BoxBox Clips channel.
On YouTube.
On YouTube,
But do check us out. We post daily, actually 2-3 times a day on TikTok and Instagram. Yep. So do check us out on there. But thank you very much for watching. We'll be back next week previewing Japan.
Yeah.
And have a good week and we shall see you later. Bye-bye.